Every year I have more trouble during those heat waves, and specifically with my legs, my feet. They feel like they are 10 times bigger than they actually are. They might even look normal. And then I can't get into a pair of shoes. And that is very annoying.
Elizabeth Stern is from Zurich. She took the Swiss government to court because she believed that it wasn't doing enough about climate change.
The main thing that I experienced is 2 years ago when I was caught in the heat outside and specifically in public transport. And then I still don't know what I had then, but I just couldn't breathe anymore. It was absolutely a horrible experience.
Furthermore, as recognized by the relevant authorities, the respondent state had previously failed to meet its past greenhouse gas emission reduction targets. By failing to...
It's been a year since Elizabeth and a group of 2,000 Swiss women won a landmark case in the European Court of Human Rights.
The top human rights court has ruled that the failure of the Swiss government to adequately tackle climate change is a violation.
It said that Switzerland's efforts to meet its emission reduction targets had been woefully inadequate.
The government is putting them at risk of dying during heat waves by not doing enough to combat climate change.
The Swiss government argued that your case should be dismissed because you weren't really victims, as you were going to be dead by the time the world reaches 1.5 degrees of additional warming. That must have felt like a pretty callous argument.
It sounded incredibly callous. You just used the word. I mean, we couldn't believe those arguments. Like, you can complain then, when that 1.5 degrees are actually here, and you will suffer from it, then you can complain. So it sounded to us like, yeah, we first have to be almost dead before we can complain.
By failing to act in good time and in an appropriate and consistent manner, failed to comply with its positive obligations under Article 8 of the Convention.
Elizabeth and her fellow activists only took the government of Switzerland to court. The case didn't involve Ireland. But alone, among 45 other countries in the jurisdiction of the court, Ireland turned up in Strasbourg on the day and lent its support to the Swiss government.
In Ireland's respectful submission, there are three insuperable difficulties with the application before the court.
The Irish government argued that only governments should be allowed to shape and implement climate policy.
It seeks to bypass the democratic process through which climate action must take place if it is to be legitimate and effective.
And that there was in law no such thing as a human right to a clean environment and a safe planet.
But it is well settled that the Convention does not guarantee a standalone right to a clean, healthy and sustainable environment.
Perhaps Ireland chose to make this intervention because it and Switzerland's climate targets are pretty much identical. Whatever the reason, the court found that Switzerland's climate targets were insufficient and the Swiss were also not doing enough to meet them. The judgment is legally binding. It can't be appealed, and it can be used as a precedent in other cases throughout Europe.
States have a duty to adopt and to effectively apply in practice regulations and measures capable of mitigating the existing and potentially irreversible future effects of climate change.
I'm Philip Boucher-Hayes, and this is Hot Mess, Ireland's Climate Action Plan. How far does it fall short of what needs to be done?
We're very pleased today to mark the publication of the Climate Action Plan 2025, which is my first camp as Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications.
As Minister with Responsibility for Climate, Dara O'Brien presented his first Climate Action Plan in April.
Years of ambition and hard work have led us to a point where we're finally starting to see meaningful reductions in emissions in Ireland.
It sets out what has to be done in most but not all areas of society to reach a binding target for 5 years from now of 51% less emissions than we were producing in 2018. The minister told the Dáil that can be achieved.
Ireland has accepted specific emission reduction targets for the period up to 2030. Ireland can meet these targets by reducing emissions through additional compliance.
It's not clear, though, why he believes the target will be met, because the climate action plan he launched says that it won't. Page 19 of the document says that even if every single cut was made and a few more unproven ones were added in, it would still only achieve a 42% cut, not 51%. So 42% is the very, very best that can be hoped for if we pull out all the stops. If we continue with our present level of effort, though, we will, the government's own action plan admits again, only get to 11%, not 51%.
Ireland can meet these targets by reducing emissions through additional compliance. It is going to be very, very challenging. Let's be straight about that. We're going in the right direction.
This is how our efforts measure up to a political target. How do they look, though, if you rate them against a scientific target? We've seen what the world begins to look like at 1.5 degrees. Valencia, Hurricane Helene, the Derna dam burst in Libya, Rio Grande do Sul in Brazil. And what we know now about those costs, economic and human, makes the case for not breaching the 1.5 degree limit.
But since Paris, there's a lot of work that has demonstrated that the impacts of 1.5 are much worse than we initially thought they would be. Really, 1.5 is the new version of what 2 was. So we should be having our primary commitment should be around 1.5, not 2 degrees centigrade.
Professor Kevin Anderson is a British climate scientist. He and most others point out that global warming has accelerated since the targets designed to keep us below 1.5 were set.
Because I think we have to also bear in mind that since IPCC R6, a lot has happened. So we've pumped into the atmosphere an extra 200 billion tonnes of carbon dioxide.
And most of us have been sitting on our hands since then. So the annual reductions need to actually be much steeper than the targets that we have set ourselves.
Now, if you take the 1.5 and the 2 degrees centigrade and update those to January 2025, the remaining global carbon budgets for 1.5, for 50-50 chance, are 170 billion tonnes.
Don't worry about all of these numbers. Professor Anderson has translated them for Ireland. Last year, after 3 years of carbon budgeting, we had gotten ourselves to a situation where we were finally bringing emissions down, and the minister celebrated that.
We saw emission reductions last year about 6.8%, the previous year about 2.2%, whilst our economy is growing, and we're seeing a continued increase in renewables. So we're certainly on the right pathway.
Nearly 7% last year, a little more than 2% the year before. But hold on to your hats. If we want to do our bit at a 50-50 shot, not guaranteed, just a half chance of keeping warming below the Paris Agreement aspiration of 1.5, Ireland would need to be quadrupling its cuts every year.
Then you'd still need over 12% per annum reductions from the start of this year. And it would be over 30%, slightly over 30% for 1.5.
30% a year, not last year's 7%. This is not ideology. This is not politics. This is just cold, hard maths and physics. Put it another way, how soon would we need to have completely removed all fossil fuels from the Irish economy?
Zero emissions from Ireland from CO2 by 2028. And that's not much similar to, it's very similar to other wealthy countries. This is just hugely challenging. All I'm doing here is taking the budgets out, the best papers that we have on this based on IPCC, and simply applying some arithmetic.
Currently, the Irish government doesn't propose to even begin phasing out gas until 2035. Let's pause for a brief recap here. The Irish government promised to reduce its emissions by half by the end of this decade. But by the reckoning of its own climate action plan, it will fail to meet that commitment. If the Irish government was to actually live up to what it promised in Paris 10 years ago, it would need to completely remove all fossil fuel emissions within 3 years. I asked Climate Minister Dara O'Brien for an interview for this programme. My request was received and acknowledged, but his department didn't respond to it.
Thank you, sir. The next item here is the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Treaty.
The Irish government is in step with many others around the world now.
Yes, sir.
Back in 2019, the European Green Deal promised to make the EU climate neutral by 2050. Today, that objective faces pressure from an atmosphere of economic crisis. Car factories.
The climate action zeal of 5 years ago has given way to a mix of slow walking and backpedalling.
With populist parties seizing seats in the European Parliament, often at the expense of Green MEPs.
Europe is stealthily rethinking its commitment to the Green Deal. Britain is wriggling out of its legally binding net zero targets.
I call myself a net zero sceptic.
Canada has scrapped its carbon tax.
We will be eliminating the Canada fuel charge immediately.
And President Trump, not content with dismantling America's climate architecture, is actively forcing the most polluting fossil fuel, LNG, on countries around the world through threat of tariffs.
The president signed an executive order establishing the National Energy Dominance Council to help increase U.S. energy and fossil fuel production.
Well, we have more oil and gas than anybody else in the world. We're going to really benefit our taxpayers, and we're going to benefit our country.
So when governments won't do what has to be done, this brings us full circle back to Switzerland's Klima Signoren.
States have a duty to adopt measures capable of mitigating the existing and potentially irreversible future effects of climate change.
There are 40 similar cases already underway globally that challenge government's weak action on climate change. This verdict will have significance for many of them.
And tell me, Elizabeth, when did you realise that your case established a precedent that was going to end up being used in courts all over Europe?
For me, that was a surprise, I must say. And specifically in terms of court cases that referred back to us, referred back to our judgment. And already half a year later, there were a dozen such cases, just half a year afterward. So how many more there are now? I don't know exactly the number.
However many there are, Ireland is now one of them. That's after the break. Ireland has a climate action plan.
In my short tenure as minister, I can already see the positive impacts of climate action.
But that plan won't meet its targets.
Even with the addition of those flexibilities, we will still not achieve that 42% reduction.
And even if they were met, those targets wouldn't keep us below 1.5 degrees.
So it's with a very heavy heart that I say that I don't think 1.5 is in any way achievable.
The Irish government also believes a clean environment isn't a human right.
But it is well settled that the convention does not guarantee a standalone right to a clean, healthy and sustainable environment.
All this adds up to a position that is at odds with the political rhetoric.
Climate change is the defining challenge of our time. It is an existential issue for humanity. And that's why Ireland brought climate and security to the top table of global diplomacy.
Which is the reason that there are lawyers now taking Ireland to court.
Now, at present, there are several other climate cases in progress. There are four framework climate cases against the state.
Justine Schoenfeld-Quinn, an environmental justice lawyer working with community law and mediation. You'll spot the similarity between the latest case against Ireland and the case against Switzerland that won the day in Strasbourg a year ago.
That case is a case in which we're the applicants in conjunction with three others, a grandfather, a youth climate activist and a minor. What's significant about that case is it raises rights-based arguments in connection with climate change, and those are the rights that are found fundamental rights under the Constitution, under the Charter, and under the Convention.
So in that sense, Justine, does that case mirror the case that the Clima Signorin successfully brought to Strasbourg?
There is a connection. So the Clima Signorin case is famous and landmark for many reasons, and one of the reasons is, of course, as a judgment of the Grand Chamber of the European Court of Human Rights on climate change, recognising that a state has positive obligations under the Convention to address climate change and to protect individuals from the serious and adverse effects of climate change and the resulting violations of their rights under the Convention.
The Irish government made an oral submission in that case and asked the court to consider that extending the convention to cover protection against climate change as a human right was a step too far. Did the court effectively reject that argument of the Irish government in its judgment?
But the court essentially took a different line. The Irish government, in its oral submission, effectively said, well, this is up to governments to respond to climate change, not to the court. And that was rejected. And they also said that the convention doesn't include a human right to a clean environment. And that's actually correct. The convention dates from 1950 and it doesn't mention the environment. But what has happened is that the jurisprudence of the court has addressed environmental rights and climate change indirectly. It's recognizing that environmental harms can breach fundamental rights, and in this judgment, recognizing that climate change can breach fundamental rights. So the court took a different approach for the first time, saying the margin of appreciation is narrowed. States don't have as much room for maneuver as they would typically have in this kind of policy context because of the overwhelming scientific evidence of climate change and because of the extent to which national governments have through international agreements recognise the urgency of taking action.
Irish courts have been very reluctant in the past to be seen to be telling the government what to do. Would this time be any different?
The urgency of addressing climate change is so widely recognised. The seriousness of the issue requires judicial action. And I think one of the most intriguing findings in Clima Signorin relates to the obligations on states and the obligations extending to courts as well to act.
Again, I asked the Minister for Climate, Environment and Energy, Dara O'Brien, for an interview to establish, did the government plan on fighting these cases or increasing its climate actions so that it didn't have to? But the department didn't respond to my request. If the thought of imminent climate collapse isn't persuasive, maybe the idea of paying billions of euros for failing to meet the climate targets will be.
And our range goes from 3 billion to 26 billion.
These numbers are very substantial, but we can avoid them.
Two of the government's advisory bodies, the Fiscal Advisory Council and the Climate Change Advisory Council, took the unprecedented step of issuing a report in March that set out the financial penalties Ireland would incur if it breached its 2030 targets.
Ultimately, the failure to achieve our climate targets will come with financial penalties. We will have to buy credits from other member states, which will cost us an enormous amount of money.
What we're looking at here is a very significant fiscal risk. We could face these very high non-compliance costs in the 2030s, in all scenarios running to billions.
Highly speculative, by the way.
The Taoiseach dismissed the report.
Highly uncertain. I listened to the authors this morning. Highly uncertain, highly speculative.
And a few days later, the climate minister appeared to also dismiss the fines because he believed that no mechanism existed for paying them.
To answer your question directly, I think there's no framework for the five. I've read the ESRI reports, I've read other independent reports about what the potential fines may be. There's no framework at the moment that details actually what the structure of any particular fines will be.
If the minister was saying that there isn't a way to pay the fines, so we're off the hook, he is incorrect.
So my name is George Hussey, and I'm the Secretariat Manager at the Climate Change Advisory Council.
George is the backroom number cruncher steeped in all the stats. Why were they so speculative, projecting fines anywhere from 3 billion to 26 billion? The reason is nobody can say for sure how much polluting we will have done by 2030 and what the cost of carbon will be then.
So there's a lot of different variables in the equations in order to come up with. And that's why there's such a wide range between the minimum and the maximum price.
So in short, you don't know how many carbon credits we're going to have to buy. You don't know how much those carbon credits are going to cost at that point in time in 2030 or 2032. And presumably you also don't know
that's the long
what the demand for them is going to be like, how many other countries are going to want them.
Yeah, that's another really big variable in the equation that we had never really taken on board to any great extent before. And it looks like a lot of the larger EU member states are also going to be in a similar kind of boat to ourselves, at least based on the projections that they have in the public domain today, in which case what we're looking at here is a seller's market rather than a buyer's market.
And can we wriggle out of the fines if there is no system for collecting them? Climate Minister Dara O'Brien might be disappointed to hear that not only is there a well-established system, but we have already paid hundreds of millions of euros into it.
That is the case. That has happened before. We have bought and paid for our units under the heading of the Renewable Energy Directive.
Nearly 200 million euro already.
Yes, Philip, we have done so. Yeah. And under the effort sharing regulation, there's a number of other flexibilities involved, which include one which is known as the ETS flexibility. And that's one that we are availing of already today.
So are you able to tell me now, even with an approximate figure, what the outflows are in 2025?
In 2025, let's say 100 to 200 million euros based on the prices in the previous couple of years, as I say. And those are not outflows as such, but they're rather money that does not inflow.
But it is money spent on emissions instead of on roads or schools or hospitals.
Well, indeed. And there's many different choices that face the government, obviously, in terms of its expenditure. Yeah.
As the regulations are set up at the moment, George, is there any scenario in the future, post-2030, in which Ireland won't have to pay a sum somewhere in the billions for failing to meet these targets?
So unless the framework for the how this works between 2031 and 2040 is radically different, no, I think we're stuck into that situation for the moment, at least, or so it appears.
200 million already spent, 100 million minimum in income that will be surrendered this year, a minimum 3 billion in fines in 2030. But if Germany, France and Italy are all looking for those credits at that time, the cost may be as much as 26 billion euro. That is the same as the total budget of the entire health system last year, with enough change left over for a national children's hospital. There are gaps in Irish climate action everywhere you look. The gap between the 7% achieved and the 30% required every year to keep faith with the Paris Agreement. The gap between repeated promises to meet our targets and the calculations that show we won't. Between what future generations need done and what this generation gets done. That's it for the current series of Hot Mess, but there is an archive now of 30 programmes that you can listen back to, looking at every aspect of this accelerating crisis. How do we adapt to flash flooding, to sea level rise and to climate refugees? How do we clean up agriculture, aviation, shipping, transport and electricity generation? What will the world look like if we don't? All available for download at rte.ie/podcasts or wherever you get yours. Thanks for listening.